Well, it is a privilege to be with you here this morning and be here actually yesterday evening and to spend this weekend with you all. And again, as Mark introduced, my name is James Walsh. I'm the Associate Pastor of Mission Covenant Church in Poplar, Wisconsin. And many people ask me, what is an associate pastor? And we were kind of chuckling about it a little earlier. Associate pastor is all other things deemed necessary pastor. They just kind of do whatever is required of us. And Pastor Daryl Nelson is our lead pastor, and he had hoped to be able to come up and speak with you himself. But he is a whitetail fanatic, and the rut is on right now. And so typically through mid-October through November, we don't see our lead pastor. We send him away and be able to honor and bless him that way. But so it's a privilege to be with you this weekend. And we're focusing kind of this weekend on what it means to be a part of a family and what really good news that is. And there's this great text that's kind of anchoring this series, and I'd like to invite you to read that with me. Psalm 71, verses 17 and 18 is kind of the key text for this entire weekend. So if you would read this out loud with me, if you would, I believe it's on the screen there. So, since my youth, O God, you have taught me, and to this day I declare your marvelous deeds. Even when I am old and gray, do not forsake me, my God, until I declare your power to the next generation, your mighty acts to all who are to come. Just fabulous words. And what I want to point out this weekend and this morning is when the psalmist says, even when I am old and gray, God, do not forsake me. But the psalmist here isn't concerned about himself. He says, until I have declared who you are. God, your goodness and your greatness and the wonder of your way of life to a generation that is growing up in this world that needs you so much. And I have to say, part of why that resonates so deeply in me is because I am a dad. I have two young boys, Josh, our oldest, who is 9 years old, Joel, who is our youngest at 7. And I want to tell you, there is nothing that matters more to me on earth than that my children come to know and to love God, and that they honor him as long as they are alive on this planet, and that they spend all eternity with him. There's just simply nothing in the world that matters to me like that happens. And so today's message that we're looking at is this whole idea of starting strong in life. And the goal of this message is for all of us to understand the challenges that face the generation that is growing up in today's world, and that we, all of us together, young and old, it doesn't matter, own the task of passing on the faith, whatever it takes. So that's what we're going to kind of look at this morning. And I'm going to orient this talk around three observations. And the first observation is pretty obvious, but it's surprising how often people, even churches, can forget this. First observation is this. It is up to the older generation to figure out, to own, how to hand on the faith to the younger generation. It is up to those who have been around a while to own the burden, the task of passing it on to the next generation. Now, of course, we do this partly because God has just kind of hardwired it into the human species to want to watch out over the next generation. It's just in our hearts. When I was a little kid and when my mom would drive, and those days, they didn't have the seat belt laws and car seats and airbags that cars are equipped with nowadays. And if she was driving along and she had to hit her brakes suddenly, what would her right hand just instinctively do? Exactly. Just throw it right up. Kind of guard you real quickly. That's exactly what it is. It's just kind of hardwired into us to be concerned about those who are coming behind us. We want to watch over, protect, care for, and safeguard the lives of the ones that come after us. Now, through the ages, what it takes to pass on spiritual life and faith varies enormously. In Moses' day, he had people actually write commands down on gates and on doors in their homes. And we're going to look at that a little later on. Then in the book of Joshua, in the very next generation, God does a new thing. God always does a new thing with the generations. And he has allowed Israel to cross the River Jordan to occupy the promised land. And they're anxious. They want to get on with it. But God says, no, before you get on with the rest of your lives, I want you to stop and do something for the generations that are to come. And God had them pile up 12 boulders that came out of the River Jordan. And then God said in Joshua chapter 4, 21, he says, in the future, when your children ask you, what do these stones mean? Tell them, Israel crossed the Jordan on dry ground. For the Lord your God dried up the Jordan before you until you had crossed over. He did this so all the peoples of the earth might know that the hand of the Lord is powerful, and so that you might always fear the Lord your God. God says, I want you to interrupt your own lives, your own agenda, and spend some time thinking about how you pass the faith on to your children, and you'll be the ones to tell them. A few hundred years ago, the vehicle was something called the catechism. If you're old enough, you may have had some introduction into this. There was a famous catechism that was used by many denominations called the Heidelberg Catechism. Just very beautiful words, and it was just kind of a Q&A form of reading. The first question was, what is your only comfort in life and death? And then the children would learn the answer, that I am not my own, that I belong, body and soul, in life and death, to my faithful Savior, Jesus Christ. What's your only comfort in life and in death? And children would learn that my only comfort, I am not my own, body, soul, life, and death, that I belong to a wonderful Savior. And they would just learn those fabulous words, to live through those words. In the Middle Ages, one of the ways it got done was through beautiful stained glass windows. The vast majority of adults and children were illiterate, so they would use visual expressions of the biblical story in the Gospels. This actually happened. This is at a church down at Evanston, Illinois. They had these, if you've ever been there, they had these beautiful stained glass windows. And one time the senior pastor called the children of the church up there to gather on the steps, and he pointed to one of these stained glass windows, and he asked them, who is that figure holding up those two stone tablets? And a girl, maybe 7-year-old, said, well, that's Moses. And the pastor said, that's really good. Well, how did you know that? And the little girl says, the plaque underneath it says Moses. Okay. Pastor just never noticed it there before. Okay. When I was young, I grew up in a church, and we had a brand new technology back then called flannelgraph. Anybody remember flannelgraph? Okay. Top of the line technology, man. It was really cool. State of the art in my day. Well, you see, the methods change from one generation to another. But the burden, the passion to get it done, that remains a constant. And sometimes it gets lost in churches. Sometimes one generation will just say we want to focus on ourselves, the stuff that we like. That's what we want to make sure there is. And they forget that there's a whole nother generation coming, and God will do a new thing in that generation. So how committed are we to passing on the faith to those who come after us? What price are we willing to pay? What sacrifices will we make so that they can know? And that leads to my second observation. Growing up, receiving the faith, living godly lives is not getting easier for the growing generation. Sometimes it's tempting for generations to feel like they kind of have had things tougher than those who come after them. I don't know about you, but I've noticed, especially in our area, and this is kind of contributive to a number of factors, but I have noticed that children do not walk to school anymore. Every day at 8:30 and again at 3:30, it's kind of the dance of the buses and minivans. And it reminds me that in the past, we walked to school 50 miles through the snow, uphill, both ways. You all are familiar with this. Okay. That was the world that we grew up in. And then it occurs to me that one of the reasons why in our neighborhood kids are driven to school is that mom and dads are no longer convinced that it would be safe for them to walk. That their children are growing up in a different world. And it's not quite as safe as the world where I grew up. where you could just walk, ride your bike all over the place, anywhere. And I want to talk a little bit about the world that the emerging generation is growing up in, because we all have to understand this and kind of own this. Some findings are that families today are overscheduled. There is a toxic and chronic sense of lack of time, a lack of reflection, a lack of quiet, a lack of space, too much hurry, too much rush, too much commitment. And I'd say more about this, but we've got to get going. Students feel an intense pressure from their peers, their environment, their parents, to succeed. Gotta succeed. Dennis Cloke Parp has written a book on this with a fascinating title called Doing School, How We Are Creating a Generation of Stressed Out, Materialistic, and Miseducated Students. Interesting title. He says, we have defined success largely in terms of compulsive achievement. Kids feel the weight of making the traveling squad in their sport, excelling in their hobby, got to get good grades, got to get into a good college, got to get a good job, and they live under the weight of this to such an extent that I've recently read an article that noted in a major school, 50% of the freshman women are on medication for anxiety or depression. 50% of the women in the freshman class. That's the world we live in today. That's the burden that they carry. Adolescence is beginning early, and it's lasting longer than ever before in the history of the human race. And I just kind of want to pause here. I know this is kind of odd, but show of hands on this one. How many of you have ever been through puberty? Real quickly. Okay. How many of you really enjoyed it? Okay. It's starting earlier than it ever has before. And again, just a few words about this one. From purely a physiological point of view, because of advances in medicine, healthcare, and diet, and so on, literally, physiologically, the onset of puberty is years earlier than it was 50 years ago in the middle of the 20th century. And not just that, kids are making life-impacting decisions about real serious stuff, about their sexuality, about the use of alcohol, about the use of drugs. They're making these decisions not in high school anymore, but in middle and elementary school ages. Decisions that used to get made at significantly older ages, they are facing these decisions younger than ever before. And through television, through movies, through the internet, the e-world, kids are being relentlessly bombarded by the popular culture's idea of success, performance, appearance, belonging, the good life in a more pervasive way and a much more invasive way than any of us ever experienced growing up. Marketing nowadays is targeted. Okay. So adolescence is beginning earlier, and it's lasting longer than ever before. And a little bit on this one. 50 years ago, on the average marital age was 22 for men and 20 for women. And within a few years of graduating from high school, the expectation was that folks would probably get married, probably enter into a stable job that would run its same course for an entire career, and probably begin to have children. Today, that whole era of life between the ages of 18 and 30, some of you are in that, some of you have kids in that, you know about this, is now being called emerging adulthood. A man named Christian Smith, a sociologist at Notre Dame, who may be the leading expert on spirituality students and young people in our day, noted, along with a whole lot of other folks, that due to a variety of reasons, the complexity, the challenge of entering into adulthood is higher, and therefore, it is taking longer than it has ever before. Education takes longer. Finding a career is much more complex than it has ever been. Financial pressures are heavier. Marriage happens later, if it happens at all. Spiritual journeys are much more complex. So we are actually seeing, these experts say, the development of a whole new stage, a whole new season of life. In biblical times, there was no such thing as the concept of adolescence. Adolescence is as much cultural as it is physiological. In biblical times, you were a child, and then you became a man. But with the rise of the Industrial Revolution came this notion of a season of adolescence. And in our day, experts are saying that there is a whole new developmental stage. It lasts from 18 until about 30. that is being called emerging adulthood. And there's a ton of implications to this, but one of them that I want to note here this morning has to do with the spiritual development. Leaving high school now has become a whole new challenge in the spiritual arena. Research indicates, and lots of studies on this, that somewhere between 65 to 90% of young people who are a part of a church when they are in high school will walk away from the church when they hit college. They will just drop out of church life when they are in college. Just let that sink in for a moment. 65 to 90% will walk away from the church. Now, we are not satisfied with that. And part of what this means is we have to rethink ministering to children and to students, not just in terms of getting them up to 18 and then they're on their own. We have to begin to ask questions now. How do we help them to get to 30 and beyond with a strong faith in Jesus Christ and a strong commitment to be a part of a faith community of Christ followers? Now, it used to be that this tendency to not be very involved in church once you leave high school has kind of been around for a while. It used to be that the biggest draw to return to church was getting married and having kids. Because when you have kids, you get desperate and you'll sign up for any kind of support, for wisdom or anything like that. Now, 50 years ago, that gap between high school and married with children was generally 5 years or so. Now it's 10, 15, 20 years. So just saying we're going to punt the years of that gap between high school and married with kids for a whole lot of reasons is just suicidal from a spiritual point of view. And not only that, young people who are raised in the faith are living in a generation that is increasingly skeptical, suspicious, and very negative toward Christianity. There's a lot of research on this. I'll just mention real quickly one book in particular. It's called Unchristian. They have uncovered the primary associations that people outside the church have with the word Christian in our day. The primary associations to those that are outside the church, especially young people, what they have when they hear the word Christian. And here are five main themes. Folks outside the church, especially younger folks, when they hear the word Christian, they simply assume hypocritical, judgmental, proselytizers who are not sensitive to others, out of touch with reality, and political in ways that are unthinking and abrasive. That is the pervasive response to the word Christian. And there are debates going on as to what degree those of us who are Christians have merited that reputation by behaving unlike Jesus, and then to what degree it's simply people disagreeing with the claims of the gospel. But what is clear is that young people are growing up in a society where skepticism and negativity about Christianity have reached levels that I never had to face when I was their age. And what is clear is that to follow Jesus today requires on the part of an emerging adult a level of courage and nonconformity that was just not required of me. And I want to say a word to those of you who are here who are under 30, who are following Jesus. You are my heroes. You are our hope. And we honor you for your courage and your faithfulness. And we cheer you on, and we are committed to being a community that will give love and support and encouragement and belonging to folks in your generation. And the good news is opportunities are so rich now. As I like to tell people, the darker the night, the brighter the light. We know what God is calling us to. And our dream is that one day all kinds of young people in this area, 20, 25, 30, who are trying to figure out, how do I navigate life? How do I make decisions? How do I figure out relationships and vocation? How do I live with all of this pressure, performance, and etc.? So that the word will just get out that there is a place where you can belong. And you can come right in, just the way that you are, and get love. You can belong and you can learn that it's right here. That there is a community of faith, love, and support. And then all the young families around here who are trying to figure out, how do we hold a marriage together? How do we handle the financial pressures and mortgages? And how do we raise kids in this world? How do we live with exhaustion? And the word will just get out that there is a place. And you can come with young families or married parents, single parents, whoever, and you can belong. You can be loved and you can get supported and you can find wisdom. And it's here. And people 75, 85, 95, who in our culture otherwise might be just isolated or left alone or something, that the word will be out there. You know what? That there is a place where you can come and you can belong and you can be loved and you can contribute. And it's here. And everybody would be loving and connecting with and learning from each other and giving and receiving wisdom and mentoring and energy and hope. And one generation will commend your works to another, as the psalmist says in Psalm 145. One generation will commend your works to another. They will tell of your mighty acts, and they will speak of the glorious splendor of your majesty. And that's available right here. We can do that. God has given us resources and peoples and gifts, and he'll lead us in that. That leads me to my last observation. The starting place for the future begins with prayer. It's a prayer deal. The starting place is to ask God to help our entire church family to partner with all families. And I want to say a word here to family members, and especially to those of you who are parents. Especially to parents. Just kind of a challenging word. A general trend in families these days is parents turning large chunks of what parents have historically done over to professionals. Again, this is not altogether a bad thing. In previous centuries, generally, whatever kids were going to learn, they would learn from their parents. In our day, mostly, we've got schools and professional teachers, and we hand the education process of our kids largely over to them. If we want them to learn about music, we'll hire music teachers, we'll hire tutors, we'll have coaches that will teach them about sports, we'll get them counselors. A lot of what parents historically used to do, we have professionals doing now. And again, that is not a bad thing. A lot of good stuff is involved in that. But as parents, we need to take this quite seriously. Many of you may not know, when I was younger, my brother and I, our mother tried to culturize us. And she would put us into opportunities to learn things. And one of her deep desires was that one of her children would learn to play the piano. And so she signed my brother and I up for piano lessons. Because she couldn't play the piano. So she got a woman called Mrs. Bates to teach us. She was our teacher. She was very authoritative. She was very good, but very stern. Mrs. Bates was German. And when I tell you she was German, I tell you pretty much everything about Mrs. Bates you need to know. She would tell us, to clean our fingers, to shine our shoes. What all of this had to do with playing piano, I don't know, but we did it. She told my mother our piano was a substandard piano and that she needed to buy a new piano. And my mother went out and bought a brand new piano because Mrs. Bates told us to do that. This went on for several years, and then my brother and I decided we didn't want to take piano lessons from Mrs. Bates anymore. And we told our mother, and she said, okay, there's just one problem. No one wanted to tell Mrs. Bates. I'm not making this up. We had this long conversation of who was going to call Mrs. Bates. And my mother finally said, I will give $10 to whoever calls Mrs. Bates. So I called her and $10. Now, parents will often just kind of outsource a lot of things to experts, to professionals that they want for their kids. And again, it's not a bad thing. But there is a tendency to think of spiritual life in the same way. There's a temptation, I think, that I'll drop the kids off at church to kind of get the spiritual job done. We'll get a coach to teach them about sports, a music teacher to teach them how to play the piano, a teacher at the school to teach them math, and then somebody at the church, they'll take care of their spiritual life. And the problem with this is that is not God's primary plan for spiritual formation, for the starting point. The central text in Judaism is called the Shema, for the first of the Hebrew words in it. A lot of you know about this. Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God, he is one. And this is how people were to be formed in godly ways. And here's God's plan in this text. And here's the text. And I believe before it comes up on the screen, I've changed the words of it slightly. And I just want you to see if you can pick out where it goes off track here, okay? This is from Deuteronomy chapter 6, beginning with verse 4. Hear, O Israel, The Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength. These commandments that I give you today are to be upon your hearts. Hire professional faith instructors to teach them to your children. Have volunteers and youth rabbis talk to them in clubs. Write the words down for them to hear once a week at church. And yea, verily, I tell you, outsource the spiritual education of your children. Did you notice where it kind of got off track a little bit? Okay. What Moses really says is this. These commandments I give you today are to be upon your hearts. And press them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home. And when you walk along the road. When you lie down. When you get up. Write them on the door frames of your house and on your gates. In other words, you cannot outsource the spiritual life of your children. Parents, it's your deal. It's your job. And I want to anticipate at this point what I know many parents tell me, and is that, you know, James, I'm not competent. I don't feel adequate. There are too many things that I don't know. There are too many questions that I cannot answer. There's just too much about the Bible that I do not understand. My own spiritual life is too underdeveloped. And to tell you the truth, talking to my kids about spiritual life stuff, it would make me feel kind of awkward. It would make me feel kind of uncomfortable. Well, let me give you the best theological response to that that I know. Well, duh. Okay. Who wouldn't feel incompetent and uncomfortable talking about God and his kind of life? You know, I have stood up and talked about faith in God pretty much my entire adult life. And not a week goes by that I don't think, God, I don't know enough. I am not clear enough. I don't believe enough. I'm not good enough. I talk such a better game than I really live. But I tell you something. Waiting for someone fully competent to proclaim God to the next generation is like waiting for the Detroit Lions to win the Super Bowl. It's probably just not going to happen. Okay. Nobody knows your child like you. Nobody can monitor your child like you. Nobody loves your child like you. And the reality is that we are shaping their spiritual lives, their beliefs about God and prayer and what matters and what to do with money and giving and hoarding and spending and relationships and sexuality and justice, concern for the poor. We are teaching our kids that stuff all the time. We are shaping them all the time, for better or for worse. So it's your job, parents. It's your task. And just a couple words to parents in particular. Be intentional about your own spiritual growth. Because you can't give what you don't have. Begin to regularly read the scripture if you never have. Get into a class that can help you grow spiritually, if that will help you. Explore membership if you've never done that. If you want to let your children know, it's important to actually make a commitment to a local church body somewhere. If you haven't done that, it's a huge step. You need to do it. Get into a study so you can talk and pray about your own spiritual life with other adults. Talk to your kids about your own spiritual life, about how to pray, about how you know God. And it may feel awkward. It may feel like you don't do it very well. That's all right. Talk to them about it. Tell your kids when you accepted Christ. And if you have never accepted Christ, here's a good idea. Accept Christ. And you can do that today. And then tell your kids that story. My son, my daughter, there was a day when I came to understand that Jesus came from God to this earth, died on the cross for my sins, and I accepted him as my Savior, and I am following him now. And I want you to know that that's the most important thing in my life. And I don't always do it right. I don't always get it right, but I just want you to know, more than I want you to know anything else, for you to be successful, more than I want you to graduate from some place, more than I want you to be skilled at doing something, more even than I want you to be healthy, I want Jesus to be your Savior too. And then when we are all part of the family of God, we can all grow together, even late in season. And that's what we're going to talk about in our next session.